Oh, hello. It's 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. You know, you get this picture of public radio listeners. They're only interested in infrastructure and high-speed rail and health care. The odd banjo solo or related hootenanny. But no, there's many of them who are interested in sports. And if you're not turning your radio off right now, you can join us for a discussion of sports. You know, the Super Bowl is coming up. And the Winter Olympics are coming up. And there are local events to talk about. And to talk about all that stuff, we have Mark McGuire from the Daily Gazette, Ashley Miller of News Channel 13, and our own Keith Strudler of Montclair State University. We want to hear from you. The number is 800-348-2551. We talk sports after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. On Saturday night, the Philadelphia Eagles will look to unseat the New England Patriots as Super Bowl champions. On Wednesday, the first events of the 2018 Winter Olympics are being held in South Korea. Boy, we have a dream team of sporting experts to discuss these major events and many more. First is Mark McGuire, the executive sports editor for the Daily Gazette in Schenectady. He's wearing a sport coat today, which is a rarity indeed. Next is sports photojournalist Ashley Miller of News Channel 13 in Albany. And rounding out our lineup is Keith Strudler, director of the School of Communication and Media at Montclair State University and a sports commentator on these airwaves. Mark, Ashley, and Keith, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Nice to have you all here.
Yeah, thank you.
Keith is, obviously you don't see Keith in the studio.
Keith,
no,
is,
we
no.
do not.
I see Keith in my dreams.
I'm also wearing a sports jacket, though. In all fairness, I wear one every day and look quite good doing it.
Oh, good for you. And, well, it's nice to have you here, and even nicer that you're not in the studio. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 if you have a sports question. And we have so many great things to talk about. We might as well dispense with this first. Two teams that I despise the most in the world are playing in the Super Bowl on Sunday. It is, Super Bowl 52.
Two.
And it's the Eagles and the Patriots. And obviously the Patriots would be the favorites here. Ashley Miller, what's your take on this?
Patriots are, what do we have, a 4-point line, five
four,
now?
4.5.
Okay, 4.5. Favorite, I have learned over the years to stop betting against the Patriots. You can never doubt them. I think the Eagles have a shot. Their defense is really, really good. But when everyone says you have to get pressure on Tom Brady, you have to do it with four linemen. You can't do it blitzing because he'll get rid of the ball in less than 2 seconds and take that advantage down the field. So I think defensive pressure from the Eagles will be key.
And the one thing you can bet against the Patriots on this is almost every one of their Super Bowls, except for the last one, has been within 4 points, wins and losses. Oh. The last one was 6 in overtime.
Yeah.
They've all been 3-point games, 4-point games. So if you want to take a gamble, it wouldn't be actually a bad bet to bet the Eagles. Ashley's absolutely right. You cannot blitz them. You have to get pressure with the down linemen, which they can do. And obviously, you do have to hit Brady. And you also have to gamble on offense. And the Eagles led the NFL in going for it on fourth down and converted 17 of 28 times. So that kind of aggressive play calling is going to have to come into play, and they're going to have to be successful.
Keith Strudler, you know, I kind of kiddingly say that I despise the Patriots, but one thing you have to admit, even you as someone who doesn't like football in the least, is that...
It's not fair.
All right, well,
fair.
I'll let you respond in a moment, is that the Patriots are one of the all-time great... This batch of Patriots is one of the all-time great dynasties in sports history, yeah?
It is, and I forget the duration between the first Super Bowl victory with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady to now, something like 17 years. I mean, you know, longer than as long as both of my kids have been alive together, which, of course, they both have been alive together, but if you added that up. So it's quite a run, and they've won almost twice the amount of games as any other coach-quarterback combination besides them. So it is a remarkable run. It's very hard to bet against New England in a game like this. I mean, clearly they are beatable. I mean, you know, as we know, Drago lost in Rocky IV. He's only human, but it would be very hard to concede that they might lose this game, particularly when weather won't be a factor. And I think there is conventional wisdom that this could be the last one, although Tom Brady's announced he's going to be playing until he's wearing Depends undergarments. And so that's...
Thank you for that.
Okay. Maybe even beyond. You know what? That was unfair. Perhaps he is wearing them now, and it is a long game, and it's such an inconvenience to go to the locker room, of course. But so I would find it hard to believe that it's hard for me to imagine the Patriots not winning this game.
There's a stunning stat that supports the Patriots' argument. During the Belichick-Brady era, the Patriots are 12-9 in the postseason against teams they had played that regular season.
Huh.
Against teams they had not played that regular season, they're 15-0.
Well, that's very interesting. Where'd you find that little bit of information?
You go to ESPN Stats and Info. It's amazing what you can find.
He's an encyclopedia over here.
You know what? You need to schedule the Patriots. I think that's the key.
Right. I think that's what the Giants did, and exactly. It's pretty much a veteran move.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. On the sports edition of Vox Pop, we're joined by Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette, Ashley Miller of News Channel 13, and Keith Strudler of Montclair State University, and sports commentator on these airwaves. I believe I saw something in the paper the other day that there have only been – Vegas has only lost on two Super Bowls in the last 15 years. And I think one of them was the first Giants win against the Patriots, and I'm not sure which the second one was, but I think the smart money is probably on the Patriots this time around.
Well, it's tough again because again they play such tight Super Bowls.
Yeah.
But the line is going to draw some. Anytime you have a new team, especially from a large city coming in, you're going to see a lot of money coming the Eagles' way. And early betting was heavily on the Eagles. It brought the original line down from 6. So. Vegas will make its money on this Super Bowl.
Is Brady the greatest quarterback of all time?
Yes.
Yes.
Keith Strudler.
Yeah, I would argue. Now on the that he is, yes. I would just argue. I would just argue regardless.
Yes. We know that to be true.
I would ask on the Vegas only having lost twice in the past, gazillion years. I assume we're not including the prop bets where Vegas is always highly exposed because who knows exactly how long that national anthem's going to go, right? Or whether it's going to be heads or tails.
And you I have can not bet on that?
Prop bets. Oh, you sure. Can bet on anything.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely.
The color of Bill Belichick's sweatshirt. You can bet on anything.
That would be very easy to fix, though. You just call Belichick and say, wear a red sweatshirt.
Yeah, and he'll be more than happy to tell you.
What is he going to do? He's going to throw away his life so Ray Graff can make a few extra dollars on the side?
I don't bet on sports. Our number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk with our sports experts. The Winter Olympics begin. Now, it's funny. The opening ceremony takes place on Friday the 9th, and there are events before that happens.
Always.
It's always interesting. Yeah, I don't quite understand it. But
because you can't wait to start curling.
Oh, cut it out. Now there are
you can't. I mean, who can I am avidly awaiting for the start of the curling competition.
There are mixed doubles curling.
Hey, I figured this would be your favorite sport in the Olympics. It's the only game
that would be a great thing to bring couples closer together. Now as I'm thinking about that out loud, what a wonderful first date.
It is. And it's the only Olympic sport you could play with a rock glass of scotch.
That's a tough first date.
I would, ooh, by the way, I would defy that. You get me on one of those skeletons or bobsled and give me a thing of scotch and I'll make it down.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, there are 2,925 athletes from 92 countries. I guess the largest number of athletes ever for a Winter Olympics. And
well, I'd skip this one if it were up to me. Just I'm saying. No. I don't know why.
Interesting that you say that, Keith Strudler, because I guess ticket sales not that good in South Korea, owing to the frequency of nuclear tests by North Korea.
I'm not making a road trip. One of the new countries, by the way, Nigerian bobsled team.
Incredible.
How would you practice such a thing in
Nigeria?
It's
the newest cool runnings.
It is.
15. Well, you can use virtual reality, I'm sure.
You have a bunch of sports that are on the slopes, and then you have 102 events within the 15 that are on going downhill, essentially. Six new medaled events are added to the schedule, include a team event for alpine skiing, mixed doubles curling, men's and women's big air for snowboarding, and men's and women's mass start for speed skating.
That'll be carnage.
What is
could
that?
They all start at the same time. Like
it's way God designed
madness.
This sport.
Exactly.
It's wonderful. They should have little nitroglycerin packs next to it for explosions.
Yeah. Interesting side note, we have a student here, Isadora Williams, who is a skater for Brazil. We actually interviewed her yesterday, and so we actually got a little Olympic excitement here on campus.
Oh, that's great. And does she have a chance, you think?
I mean, I Yes, she's a strong metal.
Good answer. Very good answer.
I'm sure our PR person is listening. Yes. Okay. I think she's a favorite. She's a favorite. Nancy Kerrigan, move over. Granted, Nancy Kerrigan has skated for like 30 years, but that's fine.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Locally, we have a regional basketball kid who has broken records, Joseph Girard. And it's pretty huge, man.
Joseph Girard III.
Yeah.
He is now the New York State all-time scoring king. He passed Lance Stephenson of the Indiana Pacers and a whole host of illustrious names along the way, from Kenny Anderson to one Lou Alcindor.
Amazing.
Later, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
It's really mind-blowing. When he just rattled off some of them, but as you go through, it's like this kid, if he does nothing else in his life, if he does, you know, college, whatever, if he does nothing else, to be able to say you passed those guys on the New York State and scoring list is pretty incredible.
And just to be clear, he comes from Glens Falls High School, which earlier produced Jimmer Fredette, mm-hmm. the National Player of the Year for BYU. Passed him on the list along the way.
Now, he's not a big kid by basketball standards, 6'2"-ish, and he's going to a big school. This will be pretty – we don't know exactly where.
We would be surprised if he doesn't. I mean, he got an offer from Michigan over the weekend. He got an offer from Oklahoma yesterday. And I think, you know, when you get that first big-time Big Five Power Conference offer, I think then other coaches kind of whoop and turn their head. And now I'd be surprised if he didn't get – more and more coming in here.
And Duke has been sniffing around. And keep in mind, he broke this record as a junior.
Right.
A junior. So he has another year to go. He has, this weekend he's playing, he's going to break 3,000 points. Next year as a senior, he's going to break the all-time scoring record in New York State, which is held by a girl from St. Johnsville, Caitlin Schaaf? Caitlin.
I don't know.
Schaaf, who played at Syracuse. And so he still has a way to go. There's one little fly in the ointment here about where he might go. He is also an outstanding quarterback who led his team to a state title. And there have been schools such as Tulane and UMass, which are smaller schools, that have offered for him to play football as
really?
Well as basketball.
Coaches love that. Coaches love that. Basketball coaches, you know, if you go to Jim Boeheim and be like, hey, you know what?
Exactly.
You can play here, but then you're going to get beat up, you know, for 10
Yeah. Well, that's not happening. That's not going to be happening at a Michigan or a Duke. But
right.
He's not going to UMass just to play basketball.
Well, let's take a break here. We have Mark McGuire, we have Ashley Miller and Keith Strudler, and you at 800-348-2551. We talk sports on Vox Pop, and we'll get to the phones in a moment.
Support comes from Dr. Lucy Chaffick, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic, cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, laser, and skin care since 1996. A surgeon's hands, a woman's touch. 518-786-1700. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. From Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. And from Mass Match, for over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service, connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you, 800-348-2551. The telephone number, 800-348-2551. It's a sports show, don't you know? Super Bowl coming up, Winter Olympics coming up, and whatever you want to talk about. Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette, Ashley Miller of News Channel 13, and Keith Strudler of Montclair State University, and who is also our own sports commentator on, Wednesdays, is it, Keith?
It is Wednesdays. I'm a little offended. But by the way, as long as we're at it, can I give you some of the prop bets here?
All right.
I thought you marked your calendar by that commentary. But we found who will be shown first during the broadcast.
Okay.
You got Robert Kraft, minus 140. Let's see what else we've got. The national anthem is always a big one.
Yeah.
How long will the national anthem be? Over 2 minutes?
Right. Well, Aretha Franklin's not doing it, so we know it won't be 25 minutes.
Well, you got your 2 minutes looks like the line in the sand. And the interesting one, what color will Pink's hair be for the national anthem?
Hmm.
You're leading. Does anyone want to take it? What's the money bet on this?
Chartreuse.
Pink?
Pink or purple?
No, pink's actually 7-4.
White,
white blonde, 5-4. It's almost even money. I'll tell you what. I like both at 5-1, blue or purple or brown/black. I think those are smart money because black's very vogue. And the purple is kind of hip. So I would go, I'd lay money on both of those.
Boy, I wish I cared about that. That's thank you, Keith.
What will you be doing Sunday?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll probably turn it on. You know. This one came in via email, and then we'll get to the phones. This is from Megan. I'm a huge fan of U.S. speed skater, I believe, Mame Binne, the first African-American woman to make the Olympic team. She's a short track speed skater. Her story is amazing. What other athletes should we be following? And that is from Megan.
I'll go first. I think one of the big names, and this is such a young team. I think they have 6 athletes who are 17 years old, which is incredible. But one of the names that keeps coming up is Nathan Chen. He's an 18-year-old figure skater, and I think a lot of eyes are on him. He is a medal contender, of course. Michaela Schifrin, huge medal favorite. Even in the events she's not that strong at, she's a medal contender, and a lot of people call her a wild card, even in all 5 alpine skiing events. So I think those are 2 names that have kind of, you know, caught some buzz on the U.S. side.
I'm going to go parochial. One of the people to watch is Tucker West, a Union College student. He could be the first American male to medal in the luge.
Oh, cool.
Erin Hamlin of Remsen was the first female to medal. She will be back.
In luge?
In luge as well.
And they must train up at Lake Placid?
At Lake Placid, yeah. It's amazing. To us, Lake Placid becomes very local when we come Olympic time. Andrew Weibrecht, mom is from Scotia, so that makes it even more local. He'll be back in alpine skiing, and he'll definitely be in medal contention as well. And in the all-important, I know this is one of your favorites, biathlon, keep an eye out on Lowell Bailey.
Yeah.
He could we're talking winter biathlon with the shooting.
Yeah.
Yes, because this is the Winter Olympics.
So, to clarify for the audience.
Cross-country skiing and shooting, right?
Yes. As my daughter said, she was looking forward to seeing the gymnastics, and I kind of had to tell her that it wasn't going around.
She's going to have to wait for a little bit.
You know what's amazing? The heart rate monitors on the biathletes and in the summer games, the heptathlon, pentathlon, where they show, I mean, because you're working pretty hard when you're skiing or when you're out running, and they are able to get their heart rate down to like a reasonable human amount. They actually show it in a graphic on the screen to be able to shoot at these little targets. Because, you know, if your heart's pounding, it's hard to, not being a marksman myself, but I imagine it's very hard to control a gun that way. Last time I shot a gun was in Boy Scout camp in Texas when I was 9. So,
how'd you
but
do?
I imagine it was iffy. Yeah, they had to clear the range really broadly.
And
interesting, surprisingly, the JCC troop from Houston we were not really well experienced with rifles at that point. It wasn't something we practiced in between sessions at the J. So, but by the way, one athlete to look for, of course, Isadora Williams, a student at Montclair State University.
There you go.
Yes, she might medal. So I heard.
But what I would also say is interesting is, you know, we should all take note of the fact there's no NHL players there. And so that's, once again, the NHL has decided they don't necessarily need the Olympics.
Well, you know, for a guy
at this point, they probably don't.
For a guy who's not in the room, Keith, you make a great seg here. Let's go to Derek in Albany. Derek, you're on.
Hey, my question is about actually what you were just talking about.
Yeah.
I'm a huge, huge
You're
hockey
welcome.
Fan, and I was just wondering, what you guys think the impact of not having any NHL players on the team is going to have for the contest.
I think it's going to be dreadful. Unfortunately.
Have you watched? Yeah. Have you watched ECAC hockey? Just put that in South Korea.
ECAC hockey is pretty good, but
that's great.
This might
I'm
be
a big
tough.
Cornell fan.
This might be tough.
You know, just to put it in perspective, you guys are younger. McGuire, you're not, but you guys are younger. There was a time when the Russians and the East Germans, they had professional teams out there, and we did not. And there was one time in 1980, I remember beating, the U.S. beat them. So,
great
not,
movie.
Not out of the question.
It is going to be a collection of college players in the United States. Up in the air with the KHL players.
Minor leaguers. Well, I think some overseas American, some guys who are Americans playing overseas can play. But my thought is, isn't this going to affect, in the NHL, you've got guys from all over the world playing. They're not going to be able to play for their respective teams either. So maybe that evens it out more.
Why?
The NHL said they didn't want to shut down.
So it was the NHL's doing and not the Olympic Committee.
Correct.
And I would make the argument, while we'll enjoy watching this ragtag band of misfits play, play against one another, very A-team-like, but I would say there was a time at which the Olympics held more cards and was able to really tell the NHL that if you want to be part of the global stage, you have to play by our rules. And I think increasingly as the Olympics has become less viable and less important, and the NHL has found its own footing fiscally, and you're able to reach a global audience without having this center stage, I think the balance of power has shifted much more towards the professional sports leagues than the Olympics. And I think there was a time several years ago where I'm sure I wrote at least two or three commentaries saying that Bettman was crazy for not wanting to be a part of the Olympic Games. They need this for survival. I think it's the opposite now. The Olympics very much needs these professional athletes for their survival because they, the Olympics are in an existential crisis in so many regards. And losing professional athletes, I think, is detrimental certainly to their brand.
Okay, time out. You just used... a ragtag group of athletes.
Sure, there, like on the A-team.
There are great hockey players throughout the world who are not in the NHL. They're not the best. We're not the Sidney Crosbys of the world. I get that. But these are not guys holding onto the boards, shuffling their way down the ice. It's still going to be very good hockey.
You just described how I ice skate, by the way. Just holding onto that side for dear life.
It's also going to throw some total uncertainty in the results. I have no idea how it's going to
turn out. I think that's the biggest thing is people, I don't know that the U.S. is guaranteed a medal at this point. I don't think people are really picking them as a favorite. But the hardest part is not that there won't be great athletes on the ice. They are going to get to South Korea and practice for the 4 days leading up to the Olympics for the first time as one team.
And that's not the same for all the other
teams?
All
4 days. I don't know. That's a great question. I'm not sure how that would work. But
can we backtrack for a minute? And we're joined by Mark McGuire, Ashley Miller, and Keith Strudler. And Keith Strudler just predicated his last statements on the notion that the Olympics, the Winter Olympics, are facing an existential crisis. And I want to, first of all, question where you get that, and I would like you to back it up with some facts.
How many countries want to host it at this point? There are cost overruns that make it cost prohibitive for most countries to engage. I mean, the summer is probably in a worse crisis. The summer was so bad that they had to award two in a row simply because they had two countries that weren't, technically rogue nations that were willing to host the Olympics in France and the U.S. It's harder and harder to find a place that's willing to host it, that can make money off of it, that isn't going to put its country into a giant hole. It's harder and harder to find true audience share to watch it. The ratings, tend to be fragmented and will continue to be so. At least when you have professional athletes in there and kind of big name athletes, there was a draw and there was the understanding that you were watching the best athletes in the world. It's very hard for me to feel compelled to watch amateur athletes, not nearly at the top of their sport. I understand they're great athletes. We all get that. They're wonderful, wonderful, athletes. But that doesn't compel me to watch. And I just think for the amount of money, for the billions of dollars it costs to put these games on and to broadcast them, I just think it's going to be very hard to continue in that kind of landscape.
Particularly when it's only men's hockey, every sport, you have every athlete that would have been expected to be there.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no other real venue for the other athletes. And so, but who wants to host the Winter Games at this point? I mean, how many countries are lining up? Look where they're going. And so to erode the luster of what they offered a little bit more, I think is very challenging.
I think, well, two things. One is Pyeongchang is significantly downsized from the wretched excess that was Sochi. And I think you're going to continue to see the downsizing and the repurposing of facilities as Los Angeles has proposed, as other future venues will propose. I don't think you're going to – we've seen what happened in Brazil with the rotting facilities, in Athens and the rotting facilities.
All right, put aside the infrastructure issues. Globally, is there not the same level of interest in general that we have seen in decades past?
I think there is. I think the hardest part being, you know, part of an NBC station and having to kind of fight this battle is the time change is very difficult because nowadays with social media, everyone knows the results long before prime time. So I don't know that the need to watch it in prime time at night is as great as it used to be, but I think people are still very interested in it. And I think that if you're a hockey fan and you know the hockey score already, maybe if you're that big of a fan, you still sit down and watch it at night. But I think that's the biggest battle is like social media and the ability to find out information is now no longer, you don't have to sit down and watch it at prime time to know that.
Quick history lesson. Nobody saw the Miracle on Ice live.
Correct. And no one knew it via Twitter and the internet either.
Correct. A newscaster said, we're going to put the result of the game up. Everybody turn your head if you don't want to hear the result.
Yeah.
That was a 5 o'clock game that aired at 8 o'clock.
And how many channels and different streams will there be if you want to say you want to watch the mixed curling event? I'm sure that'll be on a stream. How many? The balkanization of the ways you can watch mm-hmm. and the things you can watch means there are you're not going to get that huge cume if you're ABC and you have the entire thing. You're the only one.
Yep. I mean, NBC is the only one, but they have so many outlets, like NBC Universal. They'll air them on all their different outlets. And you can, for the most part, you can watch them live. There's always a way that you can. It's just a matter of, is it 2 a.m. your time and you want to stay up and watch it live, or do you want to wake up in the morning and, you know, watch it the next day?
Sure, but I not knowing, you know, not having a Nielsen book in front of me, the 2 a.m. market share is not that large. I mean, if the bank is for insomniacs and shift workers, it's a very challenging environment. But I think it's hard. Look, it's hard to get a lot of people to watch any one thing. Even Trump, who apparently just had the most watched State of the Union address of all time, even though it wasn't. It's very hard to get millions and millions and billions of people to tune into any one broadcast. I like the Olympics. I will say I'm not, and this is, I mean, I've watched them my whole life. I don't have the same level of fervor. I mean, it's kind of interesting as an artifact, but I'm not as excited as I was in previous generations. The rivalries aren't as compelling. The global rivalries aren't necessarily as compelling as they were at one point. And maybe it's just a winter thing. I mean, maybe the summer games I'll be more interested. I know those sports a little bit more. But, you know, you can also imagine if the NBA professional athletes stop participating. Would you feel compelled to watch Olympic
they
basketball?
Haven't been Absolutely. Participating for that long. This is a new thing, the NHL and the NBA being part of that.
I know, but it's also a new world where NBA athletes are global megastars, and we recognize the wide gap between their skill sets and amateur athletes.
Do you watch college basketball?
I do, but that's for an affinity. And I know you can make the same argument for country, right? Yeah, you'll watch it because you care about your country.
Yeah.
I don't think it translates. I don't think anymore that if you put amateur basketball athletes out there playing for Olympic gold medals, that people would care.
You are the most jaded person on the face of the earth. That's Keith Strother.
That might be true.
Man, you've watched too much Marist basketball. That's your problem.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 if you want to weigh in. Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette, Ashley Miller of News Channel 13, and Keith Strother of Montclair State University. We go over to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay. I don't hear the great football fan world out there screaming about Tom Brady taking an unfair disadvantage when he played with the stitches in his hand in the playoff game.
What?
A lot of silence on that count.
I don't get it.
Well, that he was.
It's an injury.
It was an injury.
I know. I'm saying I don't hear the other fans, all the other teams out there in football world screaming about he had an unfair advantage over the other quarterback because he was playing with stitches in his hand.
He toughed it out. Had a special
they
glove
pretty
made.
Pretty silent on that count.
So you're saying that Tom Brady gets too much abuse?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay.
I don't really know. We probably will never know the real true outcome of the deflate whole, you know, controversy or not, but they were pretty silent on that count when he was out there playing with stitches in his throwing hand.
That's okay to do, right? You can go out there with stitches.
You do whatever
I'm
want.
Saying, yeah, but they were pretty silent. They weren't claiming he had an unfair advantage then, were they?
I think he wants more credit. More credit is due.
Well, he was playing at a disadvantage, but no one commented on it too much.
I do remember writing like, you know, very large headlines about that in our paper. So you must be talking about all the other media that also wrote very large headlines.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. There was an article in one of the New York tabs about Spagnuolo, who was the Giants defensive coordinator, and I believe he was with one of the teams that faced the Patriots not too long ago, not the Giants. Well, he was with the Giants in 07, right?
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, he had been on a team that faced, maybe it was the Eagles, that faced the Patriots. And they were convinced that the Patriots had their signals.
Probably.
Okay or not okay? I mean, the whole business about Belichick videotaping Jets practices and having signals, is that okay? I mean, he's clearly going to be one of the great coaches of all time.
It depends on how you get him. It depends on the technology used. This has been a conversation.
Yep.
We had this conversation.
Oh boy, yes.
This depends on how you get
them. What side did I take? I want to be consistent. I need to know what side.
That's all right. Nobody was listening.
I do believe you were wrong. That's how it was.
Well, that's fine. But how was I wrong?
It comes down to a matter of how they were obtained. If you're holding up a number one finger and you blitz, and they figure that out, that's on you. If you're videotaping practices, that's
right.
A problem.
Correct.
The point
Which
is Spagnuolo
an absolutely said, ridiculous, ridiculous theorem. I mean, we're going to draw a hard line in the sand on either you're ethical or you're not. And I don't like this technological kind of determination of how you're cheating. It's you either play within the spirit of the rule book or you're not.
Exactly.
The point of the matter is Spagnuolo, when they went into the first Super Bowl, the Giants against the Patriots, they disguised their blitzes as much as they could because they realized that Brady probably knew before the play that there was going to be a blitz, and that's why he would get rid of the ball so quickly. All right, let's take a break, and then we'll get back to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551. Mark McGuire is here. Keith Strudler, Ashley Miller, Ray Graff, and you at 800-348-2551.
Support for WAMC comes from Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, as well as other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls this winter opens Alphonse Mucha, Master of Art Nouveau, an exhibition that examines the artist's role in shaping a movement. HydeCollection.org. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing assisted living, rehabilitation, skilled nursing, and respite care. Friends, family, community, 518-456-7831 for tours and information. And from the Henny and Bakery Amherst since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, hennyandbakery.com.
Hey, welcome back to the program. It's Vox Pop Sports Today with Keith Strudler, Mark McGuire, and Ashley Miller. And the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And panel, before we get back to the phones, let's take a couple of quick emails. This one's from Rick, who writes, "The Olympics had lost its appeal for me because of the introduction of professional team sport athletes. There is a reason the 1980 men's hockey gold is called the Miracle on Ice. The only miracles now, as then, are when an amateur team beats the pros. It all started with the so-called dream team of NBA players. I would never watch the men's Olympic dream team nor a professional hockey team, whereas I would watch amateur teams." And we've got to get to the phones, and so we don't want to comment too much. But I will say this. It was very annoying in 72 or in 76 to watch our amateurs face the Soviet team, which was a professional hockey team.
Yeah.
I assume that email that person also enjoys watching wood tennis rackets. I mean, there's an evolution. We have professional athletes who are really good. These are the best athletes in the world in an increasingly global sports environment. So it isn't simply just American athletes, but I would say that's what this is supposed to be all about, right?
Do you remember the McLaughlin group at all? The host, John.
Wrong.
He would say, wrong, yes. Strudler, you're wrong. This one is from Mark. A conference realignment around college football has hurt some college basketball teams. What can basketball schools like UConn do to survive when conference realignment seems to be all about college football? And that's from Mark.
Nothing.
I mean, it's mostly hurting UConn. That's the I think maybe that person's a UConn fan. But, at the end of the day, I don't know who makes the decision to go to what conference. UConn got left out of all the teams that seem to want to go to the ACC. A lot of those Big East schools, like Syracuse, went to the ACC instead. But he's right. It is hurting their basketball team because their RPI isn't as good. And recruiting is tough.
Syracuse, same boat. I mean, Syracuse would love to have stayed in the old Big East. Jim Boeheim was very vocal about
didn't
that.
Didn't they suffer a tough loss, Syracuse?
They did.
Yes, I do believe
they suffered many tough losses.
No, but one in particular.
St. Bonaventure in particular.
Yes, they lost my alma mater, St. Bonaventure, first time since 1981.
So you two want to discuss this?
At length, actually. Yeah. I think we could take the rest of the show discussing
it. I don't think the callers would like to discuss it.
The heck with the callers.
Yeah. All right, let's go.
There is no pathway for basketball programs only to kind of survive that way. And the Big East has kind of made a different decision, tried to kind of survive as who they are as a basketball identity conference. But football is 60%+ of revenues, and so there is not going to be a model by which a UConn can kind of thrive on basketball, not have a viable football program. But UConn, I think, stepped on their own foot. There is, and I don't know the inside story, I'm guessing it's personality-based. Mm. There is some reason that Louisville and Syracuse and some of these other programs were able to find a home, and UConn was not. And I'm not entirely sure what that was. These decisions get made at the highest level by college presidents who have to vote for other members to come into their conference. It's some of that, 90% of them or 50% of them are academic, 30% are athletic, and then 15-20% are personality. And so something happened.
All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Deborah in Malta is on. Deborah.
Hi. I first have to say that I am a huge fan of Ray and Alan.
Oh, boy.
And absolutely. And I just wanted to ask the panel of experts there what position the Giants are going to draft.
Ooh, this is
Would
a great
it be
question.
Quarterback, lineman, receiver, what?
They got the second pick.
I was at Pat Shurmur's press conference last week.
Yeah.
And he was asked if they were going to draft a quarterback. He didn't say yes, and he didn't say that they absolutely wouldn't. My opinion as a Giants fan is that they should either trade the second pick for other picks and draft offensive linemen or running backs or linebackers. There is a lot of need. My feeling is Eli Manning is good enough to help them win next year, and they haven't even given Davis Webb a chance. So I don't know that you need a quarterback, but the quarterback position is extremely strong, so I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
The Giants will not be, hopefully for Giants fans, will not be in a position this high to draft a quarterback of the highest caliber. So they'll come down in the final evaluation process, possibly between Josh Rosen of UCLA and Sam Darnold of USC. A wild card in that is running back Saquon Barkley out of Penn State.
Yep.
Who's considered the best running back prospect in years, possibly better than Ezekiel Elliott when he came out of Ohio State.
You better have a high pick because running backs that early are very rare.
He is massive, can run up the middle, and runs a 4.3 40. He is
a unique
talent.
All right, Deborah, what do you think?
Well, I don't know. I think that the quarterback position could go to a younger man who they could groom to come up through the line, but you have to have protection, and I'm still wondering if they have enough front line
Top of the second round, you could possibly pick up an Orlando Brown out of Oklahoma who should be available. They also have interior linemen who will be available at the top of the second round. I'll tell you, the guy, as a Jets fan, I would love to get is a Billy Price, a center guard out of Ohio State.
Well, that's an interesting point. And Deborah, thank you for the call. You're a Jets fan, McGuire.
Yes, poor sap.
The Jets may be in the market for a quarterback, and now Kirk Cousins suddenly available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was going to be available because he was for some reason, I don't know what he said about Dan Snyder's mom or something, but they never really appreciated him in Washington.
Yeah.
And to be forced out for Alex Smith, who's nice but is not going to win you a title, really makes no sense. Because if you look at Kirk Cousins' numbers over the last several years, he ranks up in the upper echelon of quarterbacks.
I think he's a pretty good quarterback.
And, yeah, so I think the Jets would be more than happy to grab him and then be able to use that sixth pick in the draft to either deal for more picks or grab a Saquon Barkley, which would be perfect.
All right, let's go to Doug in Manchester, Vermont. Doug, how are things in beautiful Manchester?
A little bit snowy.
Nice. Well, you're on, man.
Which is good. Okay, I think you guys are missing the point about the Olympics. The Olympics are supposed to promote world unity and through athletic endeavors. And my son is an athlete on the U.S. snowboard cross team.
Oh, great.
And
awesome.
He's trained every day, all year long, and with effortlessly. I mean, just, you know, to get there. And the promoters don't publicize it enough. They don't advertise it enough. They don't show it enough. And that's what takes away from it. He competes in World Cup competitions all over the world to try and get to the Olympics. This year he didn't get picked for the team by a matter of like 50 points, but that's beyond that. If you watch any of the competitions that are going on in Europe, the fan base is tremendous, and it's lacking here in the United States.
Hmm. And why do you think that is, Doug?
I don't know. I think ESPN and ABC blew it with the X Games. They only show the half pipe. They only show the snowmobiles going on race courses and stuff.
Yeah.
They don't promote the different athletes that partake in everything.
I think it's also a tonnage of sports that come into play. I mean, you're absolutely right. In Europe, you could have massive crowds for luge competitions and massive crowds for cross country competitions, but they don't have college sports. They don't have the NFL. They don't have all these various competitions for eyeballs and time and coverage that we do in the United States. And while we have these great, great athletes like your kid competing in these sports and competing at the highest level in the world, they don't necessarily get the recognition just because they get crowded out by all these other sports that are more popular in the United States, if not elsewhere in the world.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette is here. Ashley Miller of News Channel 13 is here. And Keith Strudler and you. Let's go to Kelsey in Voorheesville. Kelsey, you're on.
Hi. It's actually really funny that the last caller was calling about Olympic border cross, because that's kind of what mine is about as well. Actually stopped watching the Olympics, not the last Olympics, but the one before that. When I figured out how much money goes into the Olympics. So I have one of my best friends competes in border cross to make the Olympic team. And kind of like the last caller, she was one spot away from making the last Winter Olympics. It cost her family $70,000 a year for her to be able to compete at that high of a level.
Wow.
So, yeah, exactly. When we talk about world unity and we talk about what the Olympics were originally for, I mean, it's really kind of lost its base from there. I mean, you can't say it's for world unity when no average person could afford to compete. No average person, no matter their skill set, whatever they have, whatever natural talent ability, if their parents aren't making X amount of money, or if they're not making X amount of money, or if they don't get sponsors or whatever, what have it, like, they can't compete. Like, there's no way. So when you look at that, when you look at the money wasted into each athlete that goes to travel around the world, to go to New Zealand, to go to Europe, to go to wherever there's a mountain and wherever there's a World Cup series, if you multiply that by each athlete that's doing it from each country, and then the countries themselves building these facilities that get used for 30 days, and then never used again. Like, if you look it up online and you look at, you know, Beijing, you look at all of these old facilities that were, like, these beautiful, monumental facilities that were built for these games that you look at and, you know, the water is flowing or the everything looks perfect during the Summer Olympics. And then you go back and you look at it 4 years later and they are just disheveled and overgrown and there's fences around them and they're not being used anymore. So to me, I just see the Olympics as a waste of money nowadays. Like, you know, stuff that, like, you know, if America put all of that money that we're about to put into the Olympics into Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico could be out of debt. We could rebuild Puerto Rico, but instead we host these games.
Well, Kelsey, thank you for the call. Anybody want to?
Go ahead.
Well, I would just a couple of quick things. First of all, I'm not putting my kids in the border cross. I had no idea that's how much it costs, so we'll stay out of that. But people tend to idealize the Olympics wherever they. Everyone has a memory of what they think the Olympics was, whether it was world peace, world unity. It's always had these kind of these underlying less than, shall we say, altruistic kind of motives. And it's gone through periods throughout history, whether it was supranationalism, whether it was Cold War, whether it's kind of the hyper-commercialistic kind of ethos and period it's gone through, and now the kind of this dictatorship kind of period. The Olympics has always had a very kind of sordid undercurrent. And while I think the athletes that compete do typically kind of have altruistic means, although increasingly it became commercialistic kind of desires and motivations, the Olympics have always had a sordid underbelly for a long list of reasons. So I to me, watch them, enjoy them. You know, if you want to feel good about your country, that's great. But I don't like to over-idealize what the Olympics were. They were created for the elite back in, you know, 1896. It was never for the common folk. I mean, that's what the Olympics was. That was what Pierre de Coubertin intended this for, was to essentially create sports for French aristocracy, and it was very much in the colonialism ethos. So I don't like to kind of get into this kind of mind think that the Olympics were something they weren't.
All right, Ashley.
I agree, and it's a sport-by-sport basis. Listen, downhill skiing, alpine skiing, snowboarding, those are sports that are going to cost a lot of money. But like Keith said, it's for the elite. If you are aiming to be an Olympian, you're going to have to put your time, your effort, and unfortunately your money into it. And if at the end of the day you get cut or don't make the team, that's how it works.
But as a viewer, is it not just good enough to say, I'm looking at the pursuit of greatness, the best record, the best speed, the best time in the world? That's worth watching.
Listen, I think it is, and I get it, world unity, but we are also going there as individual countries competing against each other for the highest medal count. At some point, it's world unity. We're all in one place for a common goal, but we all want to win. That's the point of sport.
I never knew it was about world unity. That was the first I had heard about that. Well, I watched during the Cold War. It was far from that.
One of the creeds of the Olympics was a moment of truce and kind of to create some form of world peace. But even this idea of, like, you know, the Koreas are going to march together. Well, they marched together before, and that didn't stop anything. So I don't think there's ever been a moment of kind of Olympianism that has kind of altered or created world peace. I mean, even the most memorable moments, you know, the Black Power salute, I mean, those were very controversial in their time, and only later were kind of seen as important moments in perhaps moving kind of civil rights forward.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Joe and Earlton. Joe, you're on. You got to turn your radio down,
guys,
a little bit, bud.
It is off.
Oh, interesting. Well, go with the flow.
Okay. So you guys are getting pretty serious here. I'm going to try to lighten it up a little bit.
Cool.
With a little Olympic trivia. When was the, when do you know? Does anyone there know the last time that back-to-back Olympics, in other words, the summer followed by winter, were both played during the winter time? And I asked my friends this, and they look at me like I'm crazy. You're probably looking at each other now. But I understand last year's Olympics was played when, in July, August? Is that when it was?
August.
Anyone? I have a guess. Can I guess? August. Can I guess on the on the trivia?
Okay. Well,
I'm going
anyway,
with
in
50,
our summer here.
56.
But
56.
If I'm not wrong, it was played in the Southern Hemisphere. Wouldn't that be their winter? And why do we call it the Summer Olympics? Just because we dominate up here in the
Northern
Hemisphere?
Oh, yes. I see your point.
Oh, the Brazil Games. Mm-hmm.
So, Keith Strother, I don't know if you heard him, he guessed 1956.
Yeah, 56 is my guess.
No, it would be 2000.
No, but those weren't. They weren't played. They were played in their fall, I believe, because they were doing it for television. They didn't play it in Brazilian winter.
Well, that's most interesting.
Or, I mean, they didn't play it in like the. I don't think. Are we talking now? Now I need clarification on the question.
Well, he's
in
gone.
In their winter or our winter?
It wasn't our winter.
So now,
well, that's the point. He's saying that down on the other side of the
their winter.
Equator, it's summer is winter and winter is summer. Right. All right. This email came in from John at Bard College. In case it flew under the radar, the cyclocross, which is cross-country racing on bicycles, world championships are being held in the Netherlands this weekend. A lot of local athletes there on Team USA. Stephen Hyde, current national champ. Jeremy Powers, former national champ. Jack Kisberth, Ellen Noble, Emma White. Emma's brother Curtis, a senior at Union College, was selected for the world team but opted to focus on his schoolwork instead. So that's a great showing for New York and Massachusetts.
Emma's a very strong competitor, and I like her chances ever since I first heard her name 15 seconds ago.
It's a great sport.
It's rough. They ride on these bikes with like the kind of the knobby tires, but not mountain bikes.
Right.
They have to carry them across crossings, and it's a tough sport. It's no dragon boat racing, but it's tough.
And thank you for bringing up dragon boat racing at the very end of the show, Keith.
Very well done.
Hey, Ashley Miller, how are things over at News Channel 13?
Things are great at News Channel 13. We're gearing up for the Olympics. Things couldn't be better.
How can people follow you?
People can follow me on Twitter, at Miller247Time, email amiller@wnyt.com.
Very cool.
Anyway.
That's great. Well, thank you, and good luck, and have fun. We'll see you next time.
Thank
Mark McGuire over at the Daily Gazette.
Yep.
What's happening over there? Anything?
Well, you know, make sure you pick up the paper Saturday or go to the Gazette Sports on Twitter, and we're going to have a major takeout on the life of Joseph Girard III, who we discussed earlier in this program. What's it like being in the fishbowl, being the all-time New York State scoring leader? This kid has been in the public eye since an eighth grader. What's it like to be that guy?
That's cool. And so we'll look for that on Sunday?
Saturday.
That's
the day he's going to pass 3,000 points on the way to setting, passing even more thresholds.
All right, Keith Strudler, how do people follow you on Twitter, old boy?
Well, not that anyone wants to, but it's at Keith Strudler. And things going on here are very exciting. We're launching our student-run PR agency tonight. So I have to miss basketball practice.
This just in. We'll have to lead the news with that one. Hey, Keith, thanks for being
here,
my friend. Support comes from Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that's good for the skin. Jane Iredale retail shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington, janeiredale.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated for over 50 years with indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, bird feeders and seeds, organic fertilizer and advice, hadleygardencenter.com. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts, Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs, edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks again to Ashley Miller, Mark McGuire, and Keith Strudler for being here. Thank you for the great calls. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. Ooh, we talk Mardi Gras. Right now, stand by for news.